This is the sound of a couple thousand extremely happy Norwegians. I'm in the town of Longyearbyen, which is on a Norwegian archipelago called Svalbard. It's way up in the North Atlantic, about halfway between mainland Norway and the North Pole. And it's Norwegian National Day, and people here are celebrating in style.
I love your dress. Does it have a name?
Bunad.
Bunad?
Yeah.
And what is the history behind it?
It's every part of the country has their own bunad, so it sort of shows where you're from.
This is Kari Ellingsen. She's 26, and like many of the women and girls in the parade, she's wearing an old-fashioned dress, embroidered with ornate flowers. Many of the men in the parade are wearing the male version of the bunad, fancy vests, jackets, and short pants, often with big buttons or tassels at the knee. And almost everyone is also carrying a little Norwegian flag, not just carrying it, waving it enthusiastically, smiling big and spontaneously bursting into cheers. It's a long, jubilant river of red flowing through the snowy streets of this high Arctic town.
I know that some people may think that it's like nationalistic. What's that?
Nationalistic.
Yeah. It's not Norway for Norwegian, but it's like sort of Norway for everyone. And I think it's like a celebration of the human rights and freedom of speech.
The Economist magazine currently ranks Norway as the most democratic country in the world, and Reporters Without Borders also puts it at number one on its World Press Freedom Index. Norway is also among the richest countries in the world, mostly because of its massive offshore oil and gas reserves. But some Norwegians have grown uncomfortable with that.
Why should we just keep pumping up oil and pretending to be moral superior to everyone and going like, oh, we're the happiest people in the world while we're drowning in oil?
This is Iselil Kolpis. She's 27 years old, and she teaches at a high school in the Arctic city of Tromsø, Norway. Just a few days before we met, the Norwegian government had opened up more than 100 new areas for offshore oil and gas exploration.
I don't get it. It's such a bad choice.
Norway doesn't actually use much of what it drills. It meets almost all of its own energy needs with renewables. So it exports the oil and gas and uses the income to provide free healthcare and education and savings for the future. And at the same time, the country has set some very ambitious climate policy goals. For example, they're aiming to phase out the sales of new gas and diesel vehicles by 2025. Iselil supports those initiatives, but she thinks Norway's trying to have it both ways, a reputation for environmental leadership and the fossil fuel wealth. And she says it's time to make a choice.
If we just make the decision and just go, no, no more, we don't open any more oil rigs now, no more fields, no more areas, then we are forcing ourselves to look in the other direction.
For Iselil, one of those other directions is toward her own roots. She's Sami, one of the indigenous people of northern Scandinavia. And she believes that the rest of Norway could learn a lot from the Sami. But, she says, there's a long tradition of ignoring or outright silencing Sami voices.
What is Norway? Yes, Norway is Vikings and farmers and the bunad, everything Norwegian is this. And what did we decide was not Norwegian? Samis.
The Sami are descendants of some of the very first people to enter the Scandinavian peninsula more than 10,000 years ago. They developed 9 different languages and traded with each other across their Arctic homeland, which they call Sápmi. Much more recently, other groups, like the Vikings, migrated into this region from the south. They built kingdoms, which eventually became the nations of Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Russia. And as borders went up across Sápmi, Iselil says her ancestors were viewed with suspicion.
There was this thought that to create a nation, you have to have one language. Like, one language, one nation, one people. That means if it's not Norwegian, it doesn't really fit our project right now. It's not that convenient that you have a double identity. You have to choose one, and please choose the Norwegian one.
Sami music and spiritual traditions were declared sinful, and Sami children were forced to attend boarding schools. It was a colonization and Christianization process that will sound painfully familiar to many Native Americans and other indigenous communities around the world. And it's a legacy that carries on even today. Isalil says when she was growing up, no one in her family talked about the fact that they were Sami.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing because I've always known, because my last name is Kolpus, and that's an old Sami name. So I've always known, and I've always like heard my grandmother and my grandfather talking Sami, and but I didn't really realize it or understand it until I was like 18.
That was when one of her cousins started wearing a gakti, the traditional Sami dress.
And I was like, oh, that's right. We're actually Sami. It's not just a thing like some of us are, but we all are.
Later, Isalil received her own gakti from an elderly relative.
And it's the most beautiful piece of clothing I've ever seen. And it's, I think it's 80 years old, but it's like the colors are still so like vivid. And I only wear it like for the really special occasions.
She started sharing pictures of herself wearing the gakti on social media and sometimes writing posts in Sami. Lots of people were supportive, but not all.
I don't know how, like, how annoyed they are, or if it's just like a comment in passing, like they're just, oh, she's Sami now, or something like that, which you hear a lot when you're a part of the Sami population who are reclaiming. You hear a lot, oh, you're Sami now. And you go, no, I've always been Sami.
Sami people are increasingly making themselves seen and heard in all sectors of society. And for Isalil, reclaiming her Sami identity has meant becoming more politically involved, especially around environmental issues.
A lot of people say, like, oh, you're indigenous and you must be in touch with nature. And yeah, maybe, but I hope that I would care about the same issues even though if I wasn't Sami. it's a fact that a lot of the Sami culture is intertwined with nature, and a lot of our expressions are based in how we used to live very close to nature, and some of us still do.
Isalil says Sami communities are fighting the expansion of mines, railroads, logging operations, and even wind farms on land that they consider to be their ancestral home. And she says many Sami people are very concerned about what's going on offshore, too. Carbon pollution from fossil fuels is directly impacting Sami reindeer herders. The warming Arctic has brought more rain in the winter, and that means more ice, which reindeer can't dig through to get the lichens and plants they need to survive. But Isalil says it's not just rural Sami who are concerned about the impacts of climate change.
Me, I'm like what you call a city Sami, or an asphalt Sami. It's like the derogatory term. But we have a lot of issues that affect us as a people, as a culture. At the same time, it affects nature. In that way, my Sami identity and the part of me that cares about environment is two sides of the same story.
I'm now at a Sami community center tucked into the forest in the mountains of northern Norway. A group of women have gathered here to make food for a festival called Markomenu. It's an annual celebration of Sami culture, and Susanna Amalia Longstrand Andersen is its producer.
I have been traveling to a lot of international UN meetings, and I always get the question, are you really indigenous because I'm white? But I am, and
That's interesting. Who asks you that?
Other indigenous people. And I can understand them because they have a different story about colonization.
Like Isalil, Susanna Amalia often wears the gakti. But when she's not wearing it, she could be mistaken for any other Norwegian. This is one of the complexities of being Sami. You can hide your heritage if you want to. You can blend in. And in her family, as in Isalil's, there was a lot of pressure to do so, especially for the older generations.
Like my grandmother, she has never really said that we are not Sami. But 10 years ago when we went to the store, she would not speak Sami in the store in any way because other people could hear us speak Sami.
But things are changing. Susanna Amalia says her generation is determined to take Sami culture out of the shadows.
There are really a fighting spirit in Sápmi now, and you see that through art and music, that most of the art and music is about that we are still here. It's very political, most of the art and the music and nearly every cultural expression right now.
And Susanna Amalia says as her peers reclaim their Sami identity, many of them see their situation in a global context. They're connecting with other indigenous movements, like the anti-pipeline protesters at Standing Rock in the United States. There are also Sami parliaments in all four countries, Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Russia, with varying degrees of power.
We have information about the entire planet, and that demands of us that we change the way we think and that we learn to think holistically.
This is Anna Henrietta Reynas Nilud. She's 24 years old, and she's the youngest member of the Sami Parliament of Norway. She carries around a MacBook bearing a sticker with a Sami version of Rosie the Riveter.
People think that indigenous people and Sami people are something we read about in the history book, but it's not. It's so important to let indigenous people of the world tell the rest of the world how to live with nature instead of against nature.
For example, Anna Henrietta says instead of fixating on our national identities, we need to start thinking of ourselves as one species with common interests and a shared fate.
This nationality, this way that this world is organized, that too does not fit with the indigenous thought, in my opinion, because I think that we are people, we are living on a planet, we have different ways of living, but none of us are above or superior to another group of people.
This is not to say Anna Henrietta believes the Sami have all the answers. She says just like any other group of people, there's great diversity of opinion and approach within the Sami community, and she warns against reducing the Sami or any indigenous group to some kind of mystical heroes who are going to save the rest of us from environmental disaster with their ancient wisdom. Her message is way more practical than that.
Just look around you. The big society is clearly not doing a great job taking care of this planet. Of course we should listen to indigenous people.
For Anna Henrietta, being indigenous is as much about building the future as it is about honoring the past. She says it's foolish to think we're going to solve climate change using the same ways of thinking that created the problem. In her opinion, we have to open up to other worldviews.
And this holistic way of thinking that is very much alive in the indigenous groups, I think that's the only way forward.
For The World, I'm Amy Martin, Northern Norway.